Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mark My Words. It's currently 2 days since this year's National Coming Out Day, which takes place on October 11th every year, and tonight is the second part of my two-part series in honor of National Coming Out Day. First of all, just a brief introduction to myself for any new listeners out there that are new. This is Mark Shaw. I am a certified life coach and business coach. I'm in the business of helping people do what they do better. And you're listening to Mark My Words. And what I do on Mark My Words is I look for people who've got inspiring stories to tell, to talk about what they've been through in their lives that just inspire the rest of us. And tonight is certainly no different. Before I get to that, I would like to actually say something about something that happened for me this week that was in relation to National Coming Out Day, and that's actually that I took part in something called the Homecoming Project, which is sponsored by an organization here in New York City called Live Out Loud, which is a youth advocacy organization. And Live Out Loud created the Homecoming Project, where they look for adult gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender role models to go back to their high schools where they graduated from, and speak to students about what it was like growing up gay in those hallways and back at that time. So I did that, and I went to good old Fairlawn High School in Fairlawn, New Jersey. This is the second time I've been there. I went there 2 years ago to do the same thing for a small group of about 18 students, and this time it was over 200 students in the auditorium. It was an amazing, amazing experience, and I realized how much things have changed, certainly, since I was in high school. I think one of the most profound things for me that happened was I had talked about the gym class, of course, being the most difficult class for a gay kid, at least at that time, and that the teachers that I had the most trouble getting along with were always the male gym teacher because of that sports sort of locker room mentality. And it was really fascinating to have three gym teachers in the classroom, in the auditorium, who had actually required that their students attend the program because they thought that my topic was a very important one, as it also included the concept of bullying and what students can do to prevent it and to respond to it and be an upstander instead of just a bystander. And all three of those gym teachers came up to me to assure me how much things have changed in the world of high school gym classes and how this was a topic that was near and dear to their hearts too. So I just found that very, very inspiring that so much has changed. And I feel like with what's changed for lesbian, gay, and bisexual people at this point in time, there's one part of the LGBT community for whom things have not changed quite as much yet. And while they're on the way, I think there's still much, much farther to go. And that's the transgender community. So tonight, I'm interviewing another former student of mine at IPEC, the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching, where I teach, Mr. Tony Ferriolo. Tony is a life coach who coaches transgender teens and their families. Why did Tony choose this particular group to work with? Because he himself is a transgender man. What does that mean? Well, we're going to find out as Tony shares his story with us. Tony struggled early on in his life, always feeling trapped. He appeared to be, by all counts, a little girl, but inside he felt trapped in a body that wasn't his. It held him back. He struggled with it. He knew deep down inside that he was a boy, and he wanted to live his life as one. As an adult, he transitioned and had sex-confirming surgery so that his outsides could match his true insides. And here he is today, and I had a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to watch Tony grow as he learned to coach others and identified the group he wanted to help coach. What an opportunity it was, and I'm very proud to have been a part of the wrapping of the package that Tony is, knowing that he's helping so many others with the same challenges. And before I welcome him, I'd actually like you to hear the trailer to Lori Petcher's movie about his life called A Self-Made Man. Let's listen.
So as most of you know, we all have a gender identity. And usually right around 4 and 5, we start verbalizing, you know, who we believe we are. And it wasn't different for me. I always, always, always felt like a boy. I felt trapped. That held me back from living. Congratulations, you're having a baby. Let's hope it's healthy. When it's around 4 or 5 years old, we'll let you know what gender it is. Right? Because, you know, it doesn't always mean because somebody, you know, is born, you know, with a penis that it's a boy. So I say Max is the person who came into group and shifted the way the group was because he was brave enough to open himself up emotionally. I'll never forget that day.
I cried.
You cried so hard.
I came out to a close friend when I was 14 as transgender.
I was like, Mom, I think that's like the women's symbol. Like, no, she's not.
There is a lack of understanding about our lives and our bodies.
I'm opening myself up to dating, but the first line says I'm an honest guy and I'm going to let you know right now I'm transgender.
You can be with somebody that you care about, you like, you're interested.
But if I did have children, Tony, I'd want your sperm. And then I was like, oh, wait. You don't have sperm.
Don't live in the someday, one day. Right? Bring yourself back in, live in the moment, and just be who you are.
Great stuff. Tony, welcome
hey.
To the show.
Thanks, Mark. I'm really happy to be here, actually.
Great. Well, I'm really glad to have you here. It's really such a privilege and an honor to have you on the show. Having you in class, you know, for 6 to 7 months that you're in the IPEC program was just such a treat. And just, you know, seeing you grow into the amazing coach that you are and hearing your story and just learning so much for myself about transgender folks. And, you know, because even as a gay man, I have to say that it's not just straight people that don't, actually I should say straight non-trans people, right, that don't have an understanding of what that means. Gay people don't either and really, really struggle with it. So, you know, you've really educated me, and my goal tonight is to have you educate others that are listening tonight so that they can also have a better understanding.
Excellent. I'd love to.
Great.
So where do you
Great.
Want me to start?
Where do I want you to start? Well, how about this? How about a little transgender 101 or gender 101? If you can educate us a little bit on some important vocabulary. You sent me a wonderful file. It was a photo of what's known as the gender-bred person, which I just loved. And I found that very, very helpful. So if you could actually kind of describe that and then talk a little bit about, you know, so what is gender? What does it mean to be transgender? What doesn't it mean? Kind of go from there. So start us with the basics.
Yeah, sure. I'll keep it really, really basic because I don't want to confuse the audience because I'm not looking at the gender-bred person, which is a wonderful tool that I usually use. But to get to the basics, I'll just go through some vocabulary that I think is really necessary to know. So sexual orientation. Sexual orientation is who you are romantically attracted to. Okay? Mm-hmm. Your gender identity is your inner sense of being male or female. Sometimes both, sometimes neither. But everybody in this world has a sexual orientation and a gender identity.
What do you mean by sometimes both and sometimes neither?
Well, some people identify as both male and female, and some people identify as neither.
Gotcha.
Okay, so it's not always just black and white. It's not always just male and female. There's a lot in between. And people aren't familiar with that because that's not what's taught and that's not what people usually see.
Right.
But for a cisgender person is one whose gender identity is the same as their sex assigned or presumed at birth.
Okay.
Okay. A transgender person is a person whose gender identity differs than the sex they were assigned or presumed at birth. And we say presumed because doctor delivers a baby, doctor looks at the genitalia and says, it's a boy, it's a girl, That's the presumption, because science has now found that there's a lot of factors that determine what sex you are. It is some of them.
So let me ask you before you get to that. Let me just clarify the terms then. So you said the term for a person whose gender identity is the same as their sex. That's cisgender. Is that cis?
Yes.
Sis.
Cisgender. Yes.
Cisgender. Gotcha.
Cis meaning same. Cis meaning same.
Gotcha. Okay, so cisgender, and then the other is transgender, where it's not the same.
Correct.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
So sex and gender can actually be used interchangeably, because they figured out, they haven't really figured out what the root is of being transgender, but they know that there's several factors that determine sex. Some of them are genitalia. Some of them could be your secondary sex characteristics. And chromosomes. But really the most important factor is your brain sex. And the reason why that's the most important is because your brain cannot be changed. It can't be altered. So when treating transsexualism, it is to change the body to match the mind. Okay? Now, that being said, I will say from the beginning that not every single transgender person will need surgery or will need hormones for a healthy transition. Okay?
And why
transitioning
is
not a one-size-fits-all. It is different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I needed it.
So
I
what determines surgery. Whether one needs it or not?
The person. It's if some people do not need to modify their bodies. Some people are, I'm a male and I'm good with it. I'm a female and I'm good with it. You know, it's not. I know a lot of people think that every single transgender person is on hormones, and oh my God, they're going to get surgery. That's a misconception. That is not true. But for those of us who need it, it's medically necessary. It's not cosmetic. It is absolutely medically necessary. I can tell you that we lose a lot of people in our community because they can't hold on anymore because they don't have access to surgeries that they need. You know, it's pretty sad.
Losing the meaning to suicide and.
Yep, to suicide.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
wow.
So those
tragic.
Are the terms that usually in a trans 101 training, those are the ones that we want to touch upon. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, very cool. So tell us a little bit just about your story in your own words about, you know, what was it like? You were born and then you were a child and you had some feelings that were very conflicting and you went through your process to kind of get there. Kind of give us the overview. We'll dig deeper into some of the aspects of it in just a little bit. But if you could just kind of give us the overview of your story, what was it like for you?
Well, my childhood I didn't have a good life when I was a kid. I didn't understand who I was. I don't think my parents understood who I was. That led to some emotional abuse, a little physical abuse. I actually ended up, because of everything that was going on in my life, I drew into isolation. And for many years, I was alone, and I chose that. I would rather be alone than be bullied and beaten. And I was like a target at school because I was different. I wasn't like the other girls, you know. And it wasn't an easy life. I was sexually abused, so almost every adult in my life was abusing me in some way. And then I started abusing myself. I was a cutter just to, you know, sometimes people ask me, you know, why did you cut? And I think everybody cuts for different reasons. I kind of think I cut because it gave me control of when I would feel pain. Like, I had to take that
control. Can you just explain for the benefit of some of our listeners what it means to be a cutter?
Well, for some people use razor blades, but you actually cut your own body.
Mm-hmm.
And
is it always the wrist or is it anywhere on the body?
Anywhere. It can be anywhere. Mm-hmm. And you don't cut yourself to, like, you don't slit your wrist. You're just cutting yourself to, I cut myself because I wanted to see the blood, and I mean, it was almost like I had control over the pain, but it also made me feel like I was alive, because when you're abused that much and you're told throughout your childhood that, you know, you're not who you think you are and, you know, I wish you were never born type of thing, you get numb. You get numb to the world. So my childhood was painful. My adolescence after puberty, it was hell. It was awful. You know, when a trans person goes through puberty, now your body is saying, no, you're not. You know, when I first got my period, I remember screaming like a maniac. I mean, I didn't want it. I knew that that meant that I was a girl, but I knew I wasn't a girl. It was very, very confusing.
Sure.
You know, and throughout my young adulthood, too, I mean, you know, I identified as a lesbian. You know, people were telling me I was a girl and I was attracted to girls, so I must be a lesbian. But I never felt comfortable around lesbians. I knew I wasn't, but I didn't know what I was, because back in the day, there was no verbiage around that. Nobody talked about
right.
transgender people.
You
know,
sure.
So, you know, I went on in my life abusing, you know, drugs and alcohol and just numbing myself and, you know, thinking, you know, do I really want to live? And I had, I was hospitalized a few times for, you know, suicidal thoughts, and I had suicidal thoughts almost every day as an adult, thinking, like, why do I want to live? You know, for what? There's, mm-hmm. I'm not happy. I mean, you can have everything in the world, but if you're not, if you don't love yourself, and you, I was listening to everybody. I thought I was a freak. I thought I was, you know, somebody that shouldn't be on this earth. But then I watched the documentary about transgender guys, and one of the guys unbuttoned his shirt, and he said, I just had surgery. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm trans. Oh, my God. And I was like 41 when that happened.
Wow. And how old are you now?
I'm 50.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So for the first 41 years of your life.
Yeah, it was a struggle.
Wow.
It was a struggle. Yeah, and, you know, and then I said, I knew it. And when you know something, I was happy for a few minutes, but then I got very upset. I got very scared. I was like, oh, my God, how am I going to – who's going to love me? I'm having such a hard time in life now identifying as a lesbian. Who's going to love me as a transgender person? I didn't know anybody that was trans. You know, I thought I was going to lose all my friends, my family, everybody. So I actually went down to the beach to kill myself. I had every intention that day just to say, you know what, screw it, I'm ending my life, because what's the sense right now? There's no sense. Now I got to deal with this. I mean, I've been struggling through my whole life, and now I'm transgender, really. But then something happened right at the moment. There was this something inside of me that just screamed, stop and create yourself. And you can be anything you want to be, Tony. You can create Tony. You have the power to do it. And I took off, and I was like, you're right, I do have the power to do it. And I baby-stepped it for a few years. I wanted to heal. I wanted to heal the inside before I changed my outside. I wanted to be the guy I've always dreamed of being. This really cool, artsy, nice guy, fun, laid back, not angry. And I knew I had a lot of work to do to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at me now. Voila.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
You're a work in progress, as we all are, but you're largely complete on that front.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, wow, Tony. So, you know, I'm curious, when you say you knew that you were a boy, you felt like a boy. What does that mean? What does that feel like to you? What did that feel like to you, to feel like a boy?
Well, I can ask you the same question, right? Like, what did you feel like as a boy? You probably didn't feel any difference, because you identified as what people weren't saying to you, no, you're a girl, right? You were expressing your boyism. You were playing football and stuff like that, maybe. I don't know, Mark. Maybe you were.
No, I was not playing football. That's certainly for sure.
Oh, my God. But, you know, that's when I just felt like I was a boy, and I was outside playing football with my brother. He took his shirt off. I took mine off, and my mother called me inside screaming, you know, we're Italian, right? So she's like, get inside. Only boys take their shirts off. And I was like, I am a boy. And she was like, no, you're not. You're a girl. And so what happens to children when that happens and their parents are pointing at them and they're saying, no, you're not, right? For me, I suppressed it and I felt shame around it, right?
Sure.
You don't want to disappoint your parents, you know, and I just, you know, kept it inside, but I thought my mother was lying to me. I really did. I could not believe that I wasn't a boy, you know, so.
Wow. Wow. That's I can just only imagine the pain of being told that at that point. And you know, and what's interesting is, you know, as I relate back to my you know, my childhood, it's interesting. You know, I wasn't being told that I was a girl, yet I was in some ways. But it's very clear to me, and it was then too, that I wasn't being told I was a girl, as in a female. I was being called a girl because I had effeminate characteristics as a little boy and was presumed, therefore, to be gay. I always say, even if I wasn't gay, I might as well have been because everybody thought I was, right?
Right.
You know, and because exactly what you just pointed to, actually, I didn't play football. In fact, not only didn't I play football, but in gym class, I refused to play football when the girls would play kickball and stuff like that and jump rope, and the boys had to play football, and I simply refused. And everybody was like, well, why? What's wrong with you? You know, what's wrong with that? And I wanted to play kickball with the girls. And I remember actually my parents were, you know, they sat down with me. They're like, so what's going on? I was like, I just don't like football. I love kickball. I want to, you know? So they called the teacher, and they were like, so why can't he play kickball? And they made my parents actually provide in writing permission that I could play kickball. And two other boys followed, like, weeks later.
Really?
You know, yeah, so I was a bit of a trendsetter, I guess. And then the following year, we had co-ed gym. I don't think that I'm the one that caused that. That was probably in discussion already through the Board of Ed at that time, you know. But this was the late 1960s and early 1970s. But what's clear to me is you talk, Tony, about the difference between sexual orientation and gender identity.
Yeah.
While I remember clearly questioning, in some ways, my sexual orientation, I had no doubt that I was a boy.
Right.
Right. So I can relate to what you mean when you say, well, Mark, I can ask you the same question. How did you know I was a boy? I don't know how I knew I was a boy. It was not just about what my body looked like. That's clear. I certainly get that as a man today. Right. I just knew. So I guess in the same way for you, it's like you just
me
knew.
Me too. Yeah, I just knew.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Interesting. So, so when did you decide to have your gender confirming surgery, sex confirming surgery?
Yeah. The first surgery I had was in 2005, and I had my chest surgery done, and that was a life change. That was life changing. You know, I mean, could you imagine for the first time in I think it was 43 years. You know, you're standing in front of a mirror, and your mind and your body match. It was amazing.
Wow.
I shifted. I actually stood up and said, my God, you're hot, to be honest. wow, look at you. No, but it was a life-changing moment for me, and my life began at that moment. I stood up taller. I wasn't ashamed of myself anymore, you know. It was the very beginning of creating, like, being an activist and stuff. That's what really changed me, because I wasn't ashamed to walk outside. I was a big guy. They took 5 pounds of breast tissue off of me. I could bind my chest. It was never hidden, you know.
Right.
And it was just an awful thing. So my chest surgery I had in 2005, but I wasn't on testosterone at that time. I could sport a goatee. I mean, listen, I'm Italian. My mother has a goatee. Okay, don't tell her I told you, but it's the truth. Okay, so I didn't need to be on T to have facial hair, and my voice wasn't that high that I thought it wasn't that high. So it wasn't on T. But what was happening to me was I was looking in the mirror, and I was seeing this really cool guy that I wanted to be, and then every 28 days I'd get my period. And I would go into a deep depression. And it got more confusing.
Well, I think I'd go into a deep depression, too, if I suddenly got a period.
Okay, really, right? Right? But every time I got it, the depression was deeper, and I would go to dark places again. So I was like, I need a hysterectomy. And I tried a lot of doctors, gynecologists in the area in Connecticut that actually refused to see me, because what I had to say to the receptionist was, listen, coming into your office, I'm going to present as male. I'm a transgender man, but the doctor will know how to treat me. I promise you that. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't deal with that here. And I was like, okay, deal with what? And it was the first time in my life that I felt discriminated against. It was an awful feeling. All right, so I had to, like, dig deep and keep calling. And finally I found a woman, a female doctor, that would see me. And I was like, cool, right? Excellent. And every time I went to the gynecologist, I would dress up in a suit because I wanted people to think I was a drug rep or something, right? I felt very uncomfortable sitting in that waiting room. So I was like, you know, if I wear a suit, they'll think I'm a drug rep and I'd be fine. She brought me into the exam room. The examination was horrifying. And she brought me into her office afterwards, and we sat down.
Actually, I'd rather be assumed to be a transgender person than a pharmaceutical salesperson.
Okay. I'll remember that, Mark. I'll remember you said that. So she brings me into her office, and I said, okay, I need a hysterectomy, and if you can't get my insurance company to cover it, I'll borrow from my 401K. I need it. And she says, but there's nothing wrong with you. She says, it'd be very unethical for me to perform that surgery because there's nothing wrong with you. And I said, hey, I'm a man and I have a uterus. There's major things wrong here, okay? And she would not perform the surgery at all. So I did some calls. I made some calls to the surgeon that did my chest surgery. She knew a surgeon up in Springfield. And in 2007, I had my hysterectomy. And I got to tell you, that was another amazing moment in my life. Because it just felt right. It felt right.
Yeah.
And I started testosterone a little bit after that. You start testosterone pretty fast when you're having hot flashes every 23 minutes. I didn't know that. And I was like, oh, my God, what's happening to me? What is this? You know, so I started testosterone. And what was really cool about that is, you know, you're looking in the mirror and you're watching yourself change. Now, some of the stuff I loved. Others, when my hair started jumping out of my head and landing on my back and my arms, wasn't a good moment for me, okay? But
that's not a good moment for almost any man.
I know, right? I've come one with my baldness. I shave my head now, and I absolutely love it. But I spent a lot of energy on stressing out about stuff like that, you know?
Sure.
And then I started working with a life coach before I even started IPEC, and she was actually an IPEC student, and she just helped me through all that. And I don't put energy there anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice just to be in a body that I feel comfortable in and allow my body to do what it's supposed to be doing. I have a body that I should have had from the beginning. All right? It just came, you know, 40-something years late. That's all.
Right. Wow. Wow. So I have a question about the hysterectomy, but first of all, I just want to clarify something, too, for most listeners, because, you know, this is such difficult stuff for most people, I think, to understand.
Yeah.
And so the term trans man and trans woman, my understanding is that, so you're a trans man. You refer to the person by the sex that they know themselves to be rather than the one that they were assigned or presumed to be at birth. Right, so you're a trans man.
Right.
A trans woman would be somebody who was assigned or presumed to be male at birth, but knew inside that she was female, knew herself to be female, so she is a trans woman. That's
the way
of putting
it. Yeah, that's the way of putting it. Sure.
Great. Cool. So tell me, with the hysterectomy, you know, as I was sharing with people over the last couple of weeks about some of my upcoming shows, and I was talking about this show, and I actually laughed about how when you and I were talking a couple of weeks ago and you mentioned your hysterectomy, and I just had to take a step back and go, wow, it's not common that I talk to my male friends and hear them say, oh, when I had my hysterectomy. So then somebody actually asked, well, why would he have to have a hysterectomy? And it was funny that I never thought to ask you that. I just kind of take things at face value. So I thought I would ask you that. What generates the need for the hysterectomy, since that's not a visible thing on the outside?
Okay. I feel it. I'm not supposed to have any for me, and this is where I have to make it clear, too. This is only why I needed a hysterectomy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could have stopped my periods if they wanted to. I did not want to have a uterus and an ovary. They don't belong in my body. And
mm-hmm.
you know, listen, when something doesn't belong in your body, you know it's there. And, you know, and that's where, like, you know, I really don't really care what other people see. I have to feel comfortable in my body, right?
Mm-hmm.
That other people don't have to feel comfortable about my body. I have to feel comfortable in my body. And I needed the hysterectomy to do that.
Right.
Right.
Right. Okay. That, well, that makes total sense. So what was it like? I mean, I you talked about, you know, how difficult it was finding a doctor. And you told me a story that I'd like you to share about one doctor who you thought was promising, but her behavior was quite unethical in terms of some of the questions she was asking you. Can you tell us
yeah.
a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I'll just tell everybody that a year ago, September, they found a mass on my kidney. It was pretty scary. They said it was an abscess at first, but it wasn't going away. So my APRN, Vanessa Pomerico, who is a wonderful woman and an advocate and an ally to the transgender community, she always makes sure if she's sending me to a specialist that she asks the questions, are you trans-friendly? And this doctor said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll see him. Yeah, I'm trans-friendly. We now know we should ask, are you trans-educated? But that's a whole other show.
Right.
So I went to see the specialist. I wasn't feeling well. And what I want the audience to remember is that when we go to a doctor, we're at our most vulnerable, okay? So they put me in the exam room. She comes in. By the way she was talking to me, I didn't think she remembered that I was trans, and I knew she needed to know that because when I start saying, hey, yeah, I had a hysterectomy, I don't want the woman hitting the floor. You get what I'm saying? So I said to her, you know who I am, right? You know about me, right? And she was like, yeah, and good for you. Good job. And she fist bumped me. And I thought that was a little odd, but, you know, whatever. So the first question she asked me was, so tell me, how do you have sex? And I said, excuse me? Now, that's a curiosity question. The medical question would be, are you sexually active, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even go there with her. Like, I was like, what do you mean? She was like, yeah, how do you have sex? How do you have sex? And I said, well, I've performed sexually as a man all my life. And she was like, well, how do you do that? And I was like, you can buy things. I was trying to be, like, funny about it because
mm-hmm.
that's where I go when I get stressed. And she was like, oh, that's right, yeah. And now I know to tell my husband when his stops working. And I was like, oh, my God. I said, you know,
wow.
I train in this hospital. You know I train on trans, you know, sensitivity training. And she was like, oh, no, I didn't know that. She says, but listen, I have to examine you. And when she was saying she has to examine me, she was saying like a gynecologist would have to examine me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't think so. I'm starting to get an anxiety attack. And I was. I was
mm-hmm.
like not comfortable at all. And she says, oh, what are you worried about? It's probably going to look like an old lady's anyways because there's no estrogen in your body. And I'm
oh my God,
like it was awful. I was being abused. I was being verbally abused. She might not have, now people say to me, well, maybe she didn't know that she was being inappropriate. Well, she didn't know because it got worse. She's examining me. And as she's examining me, she looks up at me and says to me, gee, I thought you'd be much more enlarged than what you are. And I said, you know what,
wow.
This ends now. You know, would she have told a cisgender man that he had a small penis? I don't think so. So she says, get dressed and meet me out by the computers. I go out there. There's another doctor sitting there, and I said to myself, I'm screwed. Something's going on. They sit me down, and they say to me, listen, we think you have stage one cancer. We want you to go tomorrow, go for a bone scan, go for a lung x-ray. We need to make sure this hasn't spread. And the surgeon, the other guy says to me, you know what, Tony, if this is stage one, you're a strong guy, you're going to survive it. Don't worry about it. And he walked away. So
mm-hmm.
I said to this doctor who was abusing me for a half an hour, I said, is that why I'm still getting back pain? And she says, no, that's something else. I'll give you antibiotics, but do you want a penis because we do that here? And what she didn't know, Mark, and I'll let you and the audience in on this little secret, and it's not a secret, I am the co-founder and president of the Jim Collins Foundation, and we fund gender-confirming surgeries for the trans community, for those who can never afford it, okay? So we raise money. We've given 5 surgeries out in the past 3 years. What she doesn't know is I know what hospitals do what, and that hospital does not do that surgery.
Hmm.
So I looked at her, and I said to her, excuse me? I don't have a problem with my genitalia, and I'm here for my kidney. I mean, why would you even ask that question? You know? Mm. And she was like, well, I just thought you'd like to know. I said, I didn't like to know. I walked out of that hospital in tears, and not because they just told me I might have stage one cancer, but because of the way I was treated. And it's me. Like, I have really thick skin when it comes around this, comes to this, and I felt so bad, and then it hit me.
Sure.
Here's another pearl, Tony. Here's another situation that you were put in so that you can teach, because I train, right? So I can train the PA students and the first-year med students, and I can use that example that she just did to me as what not to do.
Sure.
Okay?
Oh, absolutely.
But,
absolutely.
Yeah, so I never went back to her. I reported her. And the whole five, you know, I went back to her one more time to get a scan result. And I was going to educate her right after she gave me the results. I was like, you know what, I have to do this. I have to right this wrong, because I wanted her to know that she was being inappropriate, because a lot of people in my community never would have went back to a doctor, and they would have died of kidney cancer if it was cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's
right.
Awful, and it happens. So I went back to tell her, but she sat me down and said to me, oh, you know what, we got your scan back. We're really concerned about you. You have cancer here. You have it on your aorta. You got it here. I said, is this going to kill me? I mean, who's going to take care of the kids? First thing I said. And she was like, well, I've kept people alive close to 5 years. Oh, come on, let me hug you. This woman just told me that I had 1 to 5 years to live. And thank God that they overread the films. For a week, I thought I had 1 to 5 years to live. All right? And they overread the films. I ended up getting surgery not even 2 months ago. They did a partial kidney removal. It was stage one. They got everything. The doctor said, consider yourself cured. But it's been a hell of a year dealing with medical providers, and she wasn't the only one that said things that were inappropriate to me.
Sure.
It
amazes me that she would treat you that way and make comments that clearly are inappropriate, and then expect you to say, oh, sure, when she offers you, a penis surgery. Oh, we do that here. Would you like to become our patient? Like, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, let's hold off on the kidney and let's, you know what I mean? It's like, and some
sure.
people say, well, maybe she was trying to be friendly. I don't need my doctors to be friendly. I need my doctors to be professional. Everybody deserves competent and respectful health care. Doesn't matter who you are. Everybody deserves it, and my community often doesn't get it. And
sure.
that's what's sad to me. You know,
see,
so if I'm able to be a...
This is so important for people to realize too about why not just transgender people, but actually so many minorities have higher instances of higher death rates from things that everybody else gets but doesn't die from as easily, and it's because of their fear of the medical establishment.
Absolutely.
You just said most people would never have gone back to a doctor at all.
Yeah.
You had the
Absolutely.
Sense of empowerment enough to take care of yourself and do what you needed to do. But so many would be so frightened by that they wouldn't follow up. So that's just a really, really important point to make. Before we continue, I just want to take a very brief break and tell callers that if you'd like to call in and ask a question of Tony or of me, the call-in number is 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. There's also a chat room on the blogtalkradio.com website. Once you click on my show page, you can join the chat room and ask a question there as well. I also just want to give a quick plug to some of our upcoming shows here on the Life Coach Radio Network. First of all, I want to announce the... and encourage people to listen to the archive of the October 11th show with Carrie Spaulding called Coming Out with the 30-something Coach. So it's National Coming Out Day, of course, and on October 11th. So Carrie did a show in honor of National Coming Out Day on October 11th. So Listen to that archive recording. It's Carrie Spaulding, the 30-something coach, and you can join her for a special show in honor of this internationally observed day. Carrie discussed in her show the particular challenges and experiences of coming out later in life, gave tips on coming out as an adult, and resources that can support you in your transition and how to support others in coming out. So whether you're part of the LGBT community or an ally, this show has information for you. What's more is that the principles that you learn in this show can be applied to coming out in any way in your life, whether it's about your sexual orientation, your career change, the ending of your relationship, or any other aspect of who you are. So to listen to the archive of this wonderful show, just go to blogtalkradio.com and search Carrie Spaulding. That's C-A-R-R-I-E, and Spaulding is S-P-A-U-L-D-I-N-G. And then just scroll down to the Coming Out with the 30-something Coach episode. Our upcoming live episodes on the 14th at 8 p.m., Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen. And in this episode, Reverend Jen is going to be joined by theologian and author Bruce Epperly, who will be talking about his recent book on the spirituality of grandparenting. Bruce is a pastor, teacher, writer, and most important, a grandparent. And then on October 15th at 8 p.m., The Myth of the Ladder to Success with Danielle Mercurio. Society is so quick to judge and dictate how you should live your life. We all know the timeline. Go to college, get a good job, buy a home, get married, have kids. But what happens if you don't play by the rules? If you stop climbing the success ladder, does it automatically mean you're doomed for failure? So join host Danielle Mercurio from New U City Coaching and fellow life coach Andrew Dow as they discuss their own experiences of breaking free from the timeline trap and how you could start living a fulfilling life today. So I am here with Tony Ferriolo. Tony is a life coach who specializes in coaching transgender teens and their families. And as a trans man himself, Tony's here with us sharing his experiences. Again, the number to call in if you're interested in calling in and asking a question is 646-716-9397. And we'll be taking your calls as well through the chat room. If you have a question, you can ask it there as well. So we're back, and so Tony, it was interesting. I didn't realize that story about that doctor was with regard to your kidney cancer. Yeah. I thought that was more related to your hysterectomy. So sorry for the confusion there. And I wanted to ask you more about the kidney cancer experience. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to ask you a few more things about your gender confirming or sex confirming surgery. What did I want to ask you? Well, I think we're done with that for the most part. But before, let's continue on the on the situation with the kidney cancer. I know that that afternoon, and this is amazing. That afternoon, when you found out and believed that you had 1 to 5 years to live, you did something pretty amazing that afternoon. Can you share with us what that was? Sure.
I was actually diagnosed on Transgender Day of Remembrance. And what Transgender Day of Remembrance is, it's a day set aside each year, November 20th, where we remember those who've been killed just for being transgender. You know, the murders are due to hatred and prejudice against my community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been going to these services since 2005. And what really pains me and kills me is that the list of these people aren't getting shorter. It's not getting mm-hmm. shorter. So we name people who have been murdered. Sometimes they go into detail about how they were murdered. It's a very somber day. I'm always asked by a good friend of mine, Reverend Aaron Miller, who runs the Trans Day Remembrance up in Hartford. He asked me to come in and empower the audience at the end. You know, lift their spirits up. And I remember when I got the diagnosis, after I left the doctor's office, I called Vanessa Pomerico again, and I said, can you believe this? Can you believe I got diagnosed on the Day of Remembrance? I said, I'm not doing it. I'm not going up and doing it. And she says, oh, yes, you are. She's very powerful.
Wow.
She's a powerhouse. And I said, she goes, you're doing it because you'll regret it. And when she said that, I remember one thing that the doctor told me after she told me that I had 1 to 5 years to live, and I said, but I feel great. She says, well, you're not going to once we start treating you. So I thought that might have been my last time to try to help my community, you know, to let them know that they're stronger than these struggles, and that, you know, I believe in them. And I'm totally about believing in people, because I see what happens to these kids, you know, the kids that I mentor in my support groups, you know, how they can come in just beaten down by people who are telling them, no, you're not, right? And once I tell them I believe in you, they start believing in themselves, and then they take off. It's like they shift unbelievably. And I wanted to be able to do that one more time. So I drove up to Hartford. You know, I write my speeches 3 weeks in advance so I can practice them. And the last part of my speech says, life's too short to be unhappy. Surround yourself with people who love and honor you, and that you are stronger than your struggle. And when I said that, I barely could contain myself. I said the speech. I said hi to everybody, goodbye to everybody, and I left. But I did it, and I went up there because my community means a lot to me. I'm honored to be a voice for the people in my community that don't have a voice. It's a big, it's a big honor for me. It's not a nuisance at all, you know? I'm honored that I have the ability to do that.
Wow. Wow. I'm just hats off to you. It's just amazing to me that, you know, you had every reason to want to think of nothing but yourself that afternoon. And instead you went out and you made a difference for others. And that's just one of the things that really has always inspired me about you and who you are, and therefore the work that you do. And as far as, you know, the list of transgender people who are being murdered, not getting shorter, just as recently as the end of the summer on the 17th of August, 21-year-old Islam Nettles was beaten to death in Harlem. And I know that her male attackers, apparently, they sexually harassed her, and then they surrounded her and a group of friends, shouting anti-gay and transphobic slurs. And at the end of the incident, she lost consciousness, and the group then scattered, and she was taken to Harlem Hospital, where she died 5 days later.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's heartbreaking. Every time
it
I
really
hear
is.
About something, you know, because, you know, it could be me. I mean, it could be any one of us who are who's trans and out. And, you know, I got to tell you, I got friends and family that are like, you know, everybody knows you are. Be careful, you know. And it's like, I am careful. I'm pretty street smart, you know. And but it's just why? Why do people take our gender identity so personally? I don't understand it. It's really sad. Hate crimes are just... I just don't understand them. And sometimes you can't understand things. You just have to accept that they're happening and do everything you can to try to help the world be a better place, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because you say, why is this such a personal affront to some people? And on the positive side of things, it's interesting. I when I did my talk at Fairlawn High School the other day, and I had shared a whole bunch of anti-gay hate crimes, anti-LGBT hate crimes, including Islam Nettles' murder and some others with the group. I shared about five or six that had all happened in the rash of such hate crimes that have happened in New York City, particularly on the West Side, all this past summer. And I asked the students, I said, how does it feel? What do you think when you hear this stuff goes on? And this one young lady, she raises her hand, and a whole bunch of hands went up, and they all had some really cool things to say, but this one young lady raised her hand, and she said almost exactly what you said. She goes, what is the big deal? Why does somebody else being gay bother anybody else that they have to go and do something like that to them, you know? And it's just really great to hear that there are, you know, young high school students that get that. And, you know, and the same goes, you know, for really, you know, we respond to difference this way. For some reason, I mean, you know, it happens to gays and lesbians. It happens to transgender people. It happens to people because of their race and all kinds of things. It's like, what, you know, WTF? You know, what is
WTF? Exclamation point!
You know, it's just, I don't get
point.
It. Just makes no sense to me. So, but it's good to know that young people are being educated about this stuff and to respect each other. You know, look, if you're uncomfortable with somebody, fine. But, you know, you treat them with respect. And you certainly don't go in and harass, beat them up, and you certainly don't kill them.
I know.
So it breaks my heart when I hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, Tony, how do you feel when you see photos of yourself before your surgery, before your transition?
Well, that shifted for me. When I first transitioned, I didn't want to see any photos of myself. I didn't want people to have them up. And And then one day it changed. I remember saying to myself, the only reason why you don't want to see him is because that time in your life there was so much shame around who you were. And there were so many people abusing you. It's bringing back bad memories. But I needed to remember the person that I was, right? Because I honor mm-hmm. that person because she had the strength to get through all of that, all the abuse, all the suicidal thoughts. I mean, and she was strong enough to allow me to be Tony. I actually have a portrait of her tattooed to my arm. I really
wow.
truly honor that person. It was a part of who I was, but it was the stronger of the two. Okay, I mean my mm-hmm. life after I transitioned is pretty cool, right? I love my life. I didn't love my life back then, but she helped me and she got through it. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure. So what do you say to other trans folks who want to forget who they were before their transition?
Well, I think the main thing to remember is that you don't have to be ashamed of who you were. I mean, we're put in that position at such an early age sometimes, you know, that you know, oh, that's not who you are, and you should be ashamed of yourself. And we look at these photos, but what happens to us is we remember all the external influences and all the pain that went around that person. But what we mm-hmm. don't remember is how strong that person was. Right? Because if that person wasn't as strong as they were, you would not be here today. So you almost have to shift and have them reframe the thought around who they used to be. Don't be ashamed of that person. Be proud of that person. That's a very, very strong person. Listen, my community, the most courageous community I know, to know that you can lose everything in your life to be who you know you are, and you're going to do it anyways, bravo. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So it's just, I'm just amazed listening to you. To imagine, I'm just kind of stunned, just imagining how a human being can go from the depths of depression and horror and that you talked about to saying some of the most empowering, amazing things and being who you are today. I'm just really in awe of it. It's just really amazing. So talk a little bit about the Laurie Petcher's film about you, Self-Made Man. I understand that's been at several film festivals. It's going to be appearing at the upcoming Margaret Mead Film Festival. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the A Self-Made Man is what I would never, ever have thought that film would be that powerful. I mean, I didn't know Laurie Petcher's at all before she approached me. She was a parent emailed her from one of my parent groups and said, you know, you need to meet this guy. He's doing amazing stuff, and you need to do a film about him. And she usually doesn't do that. But she was like, you know what? What the hell? I'll meet the guy, right? So we met in this coffee shop in New Haven, and when she walked in, her energy was amazing to me. Like, and I knew that if I said yes to her, if she offered to do the documentary and I said yes, that I would have to give it 150%. So I would really be putting myself out there, Mark. You know what I mean? Like, really putting myself out there. And when I asked her a few questions, like, you know, do you know anybody who's trans? And she said no. That was the only question I had to ask her. I wanted her to look through a clear lens. I didn't want her to look through a lens that was blurred with prejudgment about my community. So she started filming, and she did it with respect, and I actually opened up her life a little bit too, because she was never in a tattoo shop or to a burlesque show, if you can believe it or not, right? So
wow.
She was like, "Oh my God, this is awesome!" You know, so it was pretty cool. It was like a win-win. But the film really showcases the work that I do with trans youth and their family. But the way, and I'm not going to give too much of it away because I want everybody to go to the Margaret Mead Film Festival next Saturday. But it's really like, through my struggles and how I overcame my struggles, I'm able to help trans youth and their family navigate through their journeys with a little bit more ease. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's remarkable the way the editing was amazing. The film is amazing. We were in we made it into Provincetown International Film Festival in June. That was our world premiere. San Francisco Frameline, we were there. I actually flew for the first time, or second time, to San Francisco. I was like, wow. I hate flying, but I went because, hey, it was a Q&A afterwards, and I had to show up for it. But last week she announced that it's in Paris, a film festival in Paris, and we also made it into a film festival in Copenhagen. So, but for everybody who's listening, who's in New York or in the surrounding areas, we will be at the Margaret Mead Film Festival next Saturday, October 19th at 7:30 at the American Museum of Natural History. Now, word has it that these tickets are selling extremely well. So if you visit the American Museum of Natural History's website and click on Margaret Mead Film Festival, you can buy your tickets in advance. I would recommend that. But Lori Petras is amazing, and this is not the only film that she did. And her website is 5efilms.com. Check it out. She's amazing. She's very, very talented. And actually, at the festival, at the end of the film, her and I will be doing a half an hour Q&A with the audience. So that's kind of exciting.
Great. That's great.
Yeah.
And you said again, that's at the American Museum of Natural History?
Correct. Next Saturday, October 19th at 7:30.
Great.
Prime time.
Great.
Prime time. We got prime time. I was really excited about that.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's wonderful. So tell us a little bit, Tony, about the work that you do with youth and their families. What do you want us to know about that?
Well, you know, it's something that doesn't feel like work to me. In 2008, I started a youth group for transgender teens. And two kids showed up for the first group, and no kid showed up for the second or third. But I knew that if I stayed there, that this group would be amazing. And I knew there was a need in the area. And currently, I think we have 125 kids that have come through the program. Okay. And off of that group spawned a parent support group, which started with four parents. And I think today it's like 130 parents and grandparents that have come through and at least came to a group or is seeking out help just by a phone call to me. And, you know, and then I started a little art group for kids that are under 12 years old, because remember I was saying I was a cutter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing was create, don't cut. That was in my mind. Like, these young kids that are going to be going through puberty, let's give them a tool to be creative with their emotions and not, like, cut themselves or do something harmful, you know?
Right.
But what I try to do is, like, the first thing I tell the parents is, you know, being transgender is not a disability, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a small part of who you are. I mean, I would be hoping that these kids eventually would think of themselves as transgender, like you think of yourself as Italian. You know, it's kind of back there sometimes, and sometimes
right.
you think about it and sometimes you don't.
Right.
But what I try to do with especially the teens and to tell them that, you know, when you tell somebody they're born in the wrong body, it's automatically, and it's scary. Like, could you imagine
sure.
somebody saying to you, oh, my God, you're born in the wrong body? They're like, oh, my God, right? And that's the only thing you can think about.
Sure.
I try to tell them that they're born in their body, and we're gonna work on your dysphoria, and we're going to help you through that, and if you need surgery, we're going to get you through that too. But you were not born in the wrong body. You were born in your body. And I think that if somebody said that to me years ago, I think my life would have been a little bit better. Like, you know, hey, Tony, I believe in you. I know you're a boy, and don't worry about your body. It's your body, and if you feel that you need to change that, we're going to help you through that too. I know my life would have been different. And
sure,
that's all
absolutely.
I do. I think about what would have helped me when I was younger, and I give it to them. And it's really amazing work. It's amazing work, and I am in tears every time I leave a group. I'm so proud of their growth. You know, some of the families aren't on board, you know, and then you see that shift in the parents and they're getting it and they're acknowledging their children for who they really are. It's amazing. It's amazing work.
Wow. Well, you know, and I love seeing you with the kids. When I watch your trailer for your film, which I can't wait to see the film, by the way, but when I watch the trailer and I just see you with the kids, it's so great. It really is. And, you know, as you talk about, you know, no, you were not born in the wrong body. You were born in your body. I'm just reminded of just a parallel situation, and I certainly don't mean to belittle the experience of being transgender and growing up transgender, because the parallel I'm going to draw is certainly in quite a different situation. There's just one thing that I see in common, and that has to do with the deaf community and the controversy over the cochlear implant. You know, they got the cochlear implant, which can, quote-unquote, cure deafness in some people. And what's interesting is it's all the parents of deaf people that want it. But the deaf people themselves, deaf kids themselves, are like, no, there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
They don't want it. There's nothing wrong with it. They get along through the world fine. There's an entire culture within the deaf community, particularly in the Washington, D.C. area, which is where I first learned of this because Gallaudet University is down there. They don't want it. There's nothing wrong with me. But it's the parents that feel that, you know, I want my kid to have an equal chance and I want my kid to be quote-unquote normal, right? So I can see it as almost the same thing. You know, there's something wrong with your ears, you know, versus, there's something wrong with your body. You got the wrong one.
Yeah.
And wow, and it's about letting the person decide for themselves. So what's some of the advice that you have for parents out there that might be listening that either they suspect that their kid is transgender, or maybe they don't suspect it and one day they're going to find out that their kid is. What's your advice to them about how to respond?
Well, I think that this is when unconditional love as a parent is truly tested. And if you're scared to death, that's absolutely normal. You should be. Because that's what happens. They get fear. Like, you know, what kind of life is my kid going to have? You know, who's going to love them? Who's going to hire them? I mean, a lot of stuff goes through a parent's mind when a kid comes out as trans.
Sure.
Process it privately. Support your children. Let them know that you believe them. That's all. Acknowledge them. And if they ask you to, this is a big thing, the name and pronoun. You know, the preferred name and pronoun when kids are transitioning is so important that we honor that, because that's the only thing that they have control over. They have no control over their bodies. They have no rights in this world. They can't just go to a doctor and say, hey, listen, can you do this for me? They can't. They have no control over anything but asking people, hey, can you please call me Tony and he? Right? So we just want to honor them and believe them. And there's, like I said, it's not a disability. All right?
Right.
And I will tell you that I've seen this, unfortunately, kids commit suicide.
Yeah.
You know, and the rate of suicide drops when they have their parents' support and family support.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So just, you know, it's very easy. Believe them. And people say to me, well, how about if they change their mind, like, later on? Oh, you love them anyway. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
It's not, we're not, I mean, you know, your kids are socially transitioning. Nobody's doing anything permanent to them at a young age. Mm-hmm. Allow them to be who they know they are.
And what's your advice to some young people out there that might be listening that are struggling with their gender identity?
Reach out to organizations, get into a support group. Definitely surround yourself with people who believe you and honor you. I mean, I live by that.
Sure.
I totally live by that. You know, I mean,
yep.
you're okay. Congratulations, you're trans. Good for you. But what do you want to be when you grow up? There's so much more to your life, you know.
That's
and I believe you. How's that? If there's a trans kid listening and you're alone, I'm telling you, Tony Furiolo believes you, all right? And you can get in touch with me on my website if you want to chat, tonyfuriolo.com. How's that?
And spell Furiolo for everybody.
F as in Frank, E-R-R. A-I-O-L-O.
TonyFuriolo.com, where we can also see
yes.
the trailer for your movie, as well as all some other great things about who you are
yeah.
and what you do. And, you know, the thing that you talked about with parents is just so important, and it's so true. You know, as you know, Tony, I volunteer on the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender National Hotline, which I also recommend out there as a resource for any of our listeners who need some more information as well. And it's just amazing to me when we get calls from parents. It's usually the mothers. In fact, it's always been mothers. I've not. I mean, I'm sure we may have received calls from fathers. But I haven't myself. But, you know, from a mom who's like, yeah, you know, I just found out that my son is transgender, and then they'll usually correct themselves. You know, my son, my daughter, I guess. I'm trying to get used to calling her that. But, you know, he's been my son all this time, you know. And I take him shopping. Wednesday is our girl day, you know. But I want to know what I could do to be more supportive. And I'm just like, whoa, that's amazing.
Wow. No,
it's
amazing.
So encouraging. And when I get calls like that on a hotline, wow, you know. And it lets me know that there's certainly hope out there.
Oh, absolutely.
So. You know, so I also want to put out there for listeners that If you'd like also another great referral resource, the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender National Hotline at www.glbtnationalhotline.org. And you can find the phone number to the hotline on there as well. And as well as you can search the hotline's database, for referral resources, so that if you're unable to get through to the hotline itself by phone, you can certainly look up the resources online. And there's also, you can do a live one-on-one private confidential chat, text chat on the website with a trained volunteer as well. And then there's also the Trevor Project, which is an LGBT youth teen suicide hotline, 24/7, and that's trevorproject.org. So great. So Tony, I have what's the bottom line message that you'd like for our listeners to take away this evening?
The bottom line message. Well, I guess I would have to say that everybody deserves to be able to live their life as their authentic self, right? You wouldn't believe how much, or you do now believe how much my life has changed since I was able to do that, you know? And what I would challenge everybody to do is to remind themselves on a daily basis who they are, who they love, and what they're grateful for. I think that's really important, and is to really focus on the positive stuff in your life, you know, and let people live to their own agenda, and let people go through their journey. You know, don't try to stop them because you don't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just respect each other, and you know, if we can just love people for who they are, this world will be a much better place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Amen to that. Mm-hmm. And actually, I have the phone numbers for those two organizations. I think it's important that I give them out.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to just take a moment to do that. So the GLBT National Hotline can be reached at 1-888-843-4564. That's 1-888-843-4564. They also operate the GLBT National Youth Talk Line, which is 1-800-246-PRIDE. 1-800-246-PRIDE or 7743, and basically that's youth serving youth through age 25. So those are two really important numbers for folks out there, whether you're struggling yourself or you want information for somebody is. And then of course the Trevor Project is 1-866-488-7386. And before we wrap, I just want to ask you one more question to Tony, and that is that you had said in one of our conversations recently that you're going through the coach training program at IPEC changed your life. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I would have given them the money without the certification. That's how much my life changed. Please don't tell Bruce Schneider that. No, I'm serious. It was amazing. I mean, I had amazing trainers. Mark, you're just fabulous. Carrie Myers, unbelievable. But the one thing, I mean, I have a relationship with my parents because of IPEC.
Wow.
Seriously, like my parents and I didn't talk for years, you know. And when we started talking, they would not call me Tony and he. They would not. They just kept mispronouncing me, and it was awful. And I remember learning that, you know, everybody has their own agenda. You know, and what we can do is acknowledge, you know, how hard it is for them, but say, you know, I have the power now to say, listen, I can't be around this. And I remember going into my parents and saying that to them, like, you know, listen, I know this is hard for you, but you have to understand that it's hard for me to hear. And I really like the relationship we're having, but I might not be able to come around if you guys choose. And it's okay if you choose not to call me Tony and he, but I might not be able to come around anymore. Right.
Yeah.
So like 2 weeks later, it was close to Christmas, I went over there, and my father put his hand on my arm and said, it is my New Year's resolution to call you Tony and he, and we're very proud of what you're doing for your community. And I was like, whoa. I wanted to say, where's my father? What did you do with my father? I could not believe that he said that. And that's when I said, oh, my God, this coaching stuff really works, because I started coaching them without them even knowing it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just learned, I mean, I thought when I walked into IPEC that day, I knew I was going to be the only trans person, and I was surrounded, but we had a big class, remember, it was like 50 people, right?
Yeah.
I was surrounded by people who didn't judge me. didn't judge me at all. Everybody was respectful. Everybody honored everybody. And I remember leaving those weekends so empowered that I could have ran home to New Haven. I didn't have to take the train. Seriously. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing how when, you know, you focus on the positive and you surround yourself with positive energy, how your life can change. And I want to take that class over. I should come and help you sometime. I should be like your assistant, hand out the books and stuff.
Well, you can do that, actually, because I don't know if, you know, if you're aware, but once you graduate from the program, you can come back
and
volunteer on a weekend. I would love to have you. So we'll talk offline about getting that to happen, Tony. It would just be a delight, an absolute delight to have you in the room. And, so what I'm imagining then is it's really the ability to ask thought-provoking, empowering questions to your parents and challenge in a non-judgmental way.
Yeah.
That really opened the way for that relationship to occur, and those are the skills that you learned when you were trained as a coach. Am I right about am I right about that?
Absolutely right about that. In IPEC terms, absolutely.
Yeah. and of course, I asked you a closed-ended question. I should have said, "How accurate is that, Tony?" you know, and I'll never forget, Tony. I will never forget the very day that we learned the certain skill of acknowledging and validating our clients' feelings, right? And then you ended up having a text chat with one of your kids that was incredible. That then became your class project.
It was part of my presentation, yeah.
Yeah.
That kid was ready to cut
themselves.
Yeah, I was amazed how the tools that you gave me that day save this kid from cutting, you know.
Yeah.
It was truly amazing. I still have that, you know, coaching scenario written down, and I look at it. I actually look at that sometimes, and I read your response to it, because you said some powerful things to me that, you know, made me feel really good. Like, you know, yeah, I can do this. I can be a coach, you know. So I thank you for that, Mark.
Well, you're very welcome. And as we look, you know, sometime after that, not only can you be a coach, but clearly you are, and you were born one, and you were born to be one.
Yes.
The entire coaching profession is just lucky to have you as one of us. And I'm glad that I get to claim you as one of mine. So that's just great. I just love you.
No,
I just love you.
Love you too, Mark.
And I this one final question that I'm dying to ask you, and that is, and this is a man-to-man question, Tony. Are you ready?
Yeah.
How much does it really bother you when someone leaves the toilet seat up?
I leave the toilet seat up. I can't say anything. I do. I leave the toilet seat up because I like people's reactions to it when they go in there. They're like, what? People that know me, you know, it's like I always leave it up. Whatever.
It's funny. It is funny because actually a friend of mine who's transgender, and so he was over here once, and he's from out of town, so he stayed over. He stayed overnight while visiting here on the East Coast. And as I came out of the bathroom, he went in to go use the bathroom. When he came out, I realized, oh no, I left the seat up. So I said to him, I said, I'm sorry, I left the seat up. I didn't think to put it down. And he goes, actually, I usually put it up, and I didn't even put it up for you. And I'm like, I'm not used to having this conversation with my male house guests, I have to say.
The toilet seat. That's all. You should do a whole show on that.
On just the toilet seat controversy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be a guest. We'll have a panel discussion on it.
Right, exactly. So, great, very good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Tony. Having you on the show. I can't wait to see you soon. We'll definitely have to make that happen, get together. It's
yeah,
been
absolutely,
a very long time.
Absolutely.
So great. So thank you. And and good luck. And with the are you pretty much cured with the cancer at this point?
Yeah. I mean, the doctor, they got everything, and the doctor looked at me and said, consider yourself cured. And I had him say it five times because I'm Italian. I didn't believe him the first four. All right, so yes, I am totally cured. Just like general population, it have 2% chance of it coming back in 5 years and 3% in 10 years. So, yes, I'm good. How grateful, really.
Yes, absolutely. Wow, well, congratulations for that, and I wish you continued good health and a very, very, very long, happy life. We need you.
Thanks.
We need you around.
Yes.
Those kids need you.
All right.
So, very good. So before I wrap it up for tonight, I'd like to invite our guests to feel free to mark your words if you'd like. If you have feedback for us that you would like to communicate to the Life Coach Radio Network, visit us at www.blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network. Then just click the follow button and send us a message. If you'd like to give feedback directly to me or suggest a show topic, go to markshall.com and fill out the contact form. That's MarkShall, markshall.com. I really hope you enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating, as I did. And I look forward to speaking with you all again on my next show next month. So thank you so much again for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words. Good night.